Good morning, South Church, and happy Easter. It's good to be gathered in Easter's light of earth's renewal, light of transformation, light of hope. Presbyterian minister and writer Frederick Buechner says in his memoir, Now and Then, we come to church, some of us hostile, some of us searching, some both at once, because we all want to find the answer to one question beyond all other questions, which is the question, is it true? Is it true that there is meaning? I would argue that this good sanctuary fills up on Easter morning not because we want to know if our lives have meaning, but because we know that they do. We come because we are witnesses to the deep truth of resurrection, which is not the same thing as resuscitation after all. We come because the timeless narrative of love's redeeming power animates our relationships with one another, as well as the work that we do in the world. We know our lives have meaning, but we sometimes lose the thread, forget who we are and why we're here. Meaning and purpose are, after all, hard won. Claimed and reclaimed through life's passages, from heartbreak to repair, from disillusionment to renewed hope. These passages are at the heart of the Easter story, and I would go so far as to say that instead of the unlikeliest UU celebration, Easter is quintessentially UU. Its hope-filled message of living beyond loss, of continuing to struggle for justice beyond its seeming collapse, is our meaning and our work. There's much to say about Jesus as teacher, healer, and prophet. 2,000 years after he inspired a bottom-up revolution in his own time, Jesus' teachings continue to fuel the work of our 21st century prophets and activists. Love one another as I have loved you. This was his only commandment, but its fulfillment has far-reaching consequences for us personally and communally. Jesus showed us by the model of his life that he meant feed and clothe and heal one another. Give each other shelter. Break bread together as a way of remembering me and of creating community. Leave no one out. The Easter story mirrors our own deeply human struggle not to give up when love's fulfillment feels out of reach, when meaning and purpose get lost. How do we do that? How do we make that crucial, life-affirming passage from despair to hope? As witness and storyteller, it's Mary Magdalene's part in the Easter narrative that may shed some light on how we do this and why we must. The painting on the cover of our orders of service this morning, and I hope you all have one because I'm going to be referring to it. The painting on the cover of our orders of service this morning could be an image of any one of us. Except we don't see ourselves as saints and we can't see our halos. Painted by the artist Janet McKenzie, it's an image of Mary Magdalene, a Jewish woman who, in the New Testament stories, travels with Jesus as one of his closest friends and helpers. She is with him to the end, keeping watch by his side as he dies on the cross. And it's Mary, we're told, who days later encounters the resurrected Jesus in his tomb. Look closely. What do you see in her gaze, her expression? You see that she is offering a gift in her open palms, but it's not entirely clear what her offering is. A small orange or an egg, perhaps. Something nourishing in any case, and given for you, the viewer, to take or not to take. One of the things I'm struck by when I study this image is that Mary's gift is not offered on outstretched hands. Rather, she seems to be holding her gift closer to her body, so that if I were to take what she is offering, I would need to draw near to her. She's giving me room to choose. One of the reasons I chose this image for us this morning is that it's hard to see it without being engaged by it. Mary's gaze is upon us. Her hands are open to us. The image is personal. She wants our response. I think the Easter story itself is like this, mysterious but also intimate and arresting, inviting us to step in a little closer. The Gospel of John in the New Testament gives the fullest version of what happened 3 days after Jesus died. He tells us that very early in the morning, when it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to Jesus' tomb and saw that the stone had been rolled away from its entrance. Jesus' body appeared to be gone. Weeping there for her beloved friend, she sees two angels sitting where the body of Jesus had been. "Why are you weeping?" they ask. And she replies that she weeps for the missing body of her friend. "They have taken him away, and I do not know where they have laid him," she says. Mary then sees a man she does not recognize and supposes is the gardener. Though we readers know, in a bit of dramatic irony, we know him to be Jesus. And Jesus asks her, "Whom are you looking for?" "Please," she says, "if you have carried away my friend, tell me where you have laid him." Then, when the man Mary does not recognize speaks her name, Mary, her heart responds. She hears his voice, and she reaches out to touch him. But Jesus says, "Do not hold on to me, Mary, because I have not yet ascended. But go now and tell the others what you have seen." There are so many complicated and wonderful parts to this story, beginning with the angel's question to Mary, "Why are you weeping?" She weeps, we know, because her cherished friend is gone. He was her trusted teacher, wise, caring, and visionary. The way he'd lived, the way he'd loved her and others, the courage and strength that he had inspired, these things had changed her. She weeps, we know, because it's his body she misses as much as his spirit. The light in his eyes, the warmth of his nearness, the timbre of his voice. She weeps, we know, for herself too, because she feels bereft, as though the best part of herself has died with her beloved friend. The life she'd given to his mission has vanished, and she fears the derailment of a movement that had inspired hope in the possibility of a world in which mutual care and peace could prevail over hate and injustice. Without him, she cannot quite locate herself, cannot imagine, not yet, how she will go on, how anyone goes on when death turns the whole world dark. My guess is that the angels know all of this too. They're angels, after all. And in the world of the story, they are patient and caring, willing to sit with Mary while she mourns, keeping still, holding her in the light of their kind understanding. Their question, "Why are you weeping?" gives necessary and vital room for grief itself. But I suspect the angels are holding two realities at once, as angels must. We can detect in their question, "Why are you weeping?" the traces of a larger wisdom that points past grief to its transformation, toward Mary's loss and its natural sorrow, yes, but also to the reality of love's ongoing creation, which she does not yet perceive. When Jesus' question comes, "Whom are you looking for?" we sense even more strongly the shift in the story's course and its larger meanings begin to emerge. Mary is looking for Jesus, yes, and she'd give anything to hold him, anything to have all that was familiar returned to her, just as it was. But in the world of the story, this man she supposes to be the gardener is, like the angels, holding two realities at once. Jesus knows Mary is looking for him, but his question invites her to see beyond him to the larger meaning of his life and its ongoing call. "Love one another," he'd said, "as I have loved you. Let your love for me bring about in you a change of heart, a vision of oneness that holds all, heals all." When Mary hears her name, she recognizes the voice of love and reaches out to hold the changing form of the man before her. And Jesus says, in so many words, "Do not cling to me. I am changing. Go and tell the others what you have seen." Do not cling. I am changing. Tell the others what you have seen. What must it have been like to hear Jesus' voice close at her ear, to reach out full of joy and longing for one touch, and then not to touch? This caution not to hold is crucial to the Easter story and to every passage we make from heartbreak to repair, from despair to hope. What I understand Jesus to mean by "do not hold" is that the nature of love is flow, that living and dying belong to the same stream of ongoing transformation. Clinging is, in every sense, hopeless. Instead of holding on, Jesus says, "Go and tell. Go and tell what you have seen. Keep the fire burning. The work we have to do, the world we have to make and remake, depends on our hope in the possibility of its fullest realization." If I had sympathy for Mary at the beginning of this story, I have more for her here at the end. As she turned away from that heavily scented crypt, its emptiness and voices, its sorrows and its mysteries, what did she imagine she could say as she stepped into the full light of day? How would she be a faithful witness? What words in what order? We don't know exactly what words she uttered that conveyed her experience. Language and time, the exigencies of writers, theologians, and institutions have obscured as much as they have illuminated, which is why I love Janet McKenzie's painting. In this image, we see that Mary herself has been transformed. Inside the chrysalis of her heart, there is great suffering. You can see it in her eyes. We do not suffer if we have not loved. But there is also a gift, a kind of food to share, nourishment for those who, like her, grieve and hope, know trust that love and its light continue. I imagine her saying something like this: we have suffered, yes, and we grieve, but we must not hold to what is past. Jesus showed us how to live, how to love, and that love is magnified in us and through us. Let us take up again the work that is ours to do, and in this way, remember him. Because our lives are not so very different in their essentials from Mary's. We know there is truth to what she found in that cave. We know we cannot hold on to our beloveds, nor to the particular body of their lives. We must trust that loving them and being loved by them transforms us and lights a way forward without them. One doesn't have to live long to experience personal and communal devastations that are in every particular endings. What has been is no more. But we learn young, too, that every ending contains within it the seeds of a new creation, and our freedom consists in letting go of old forms so that something new may take shape within and through us. What are the stories you tell of love's redeeming work? What have you seen of new life miraculously arising out of death's ashes? What are your stories, and to whom do you tell them? To those I trust who need your hope, who are lifted up and held by your solace, who will carry on in Easter's light because of your vision, so that they too can serve the work of love's continuing. Let us be, like Mary, hope bringers. Witnesses not only to death and its sorrows, but also to restoration and renewal, both personal and communal. Witnesses who know that grief must lead us finally out of every tomb and return us at last to the world of the living. Let us, like Mary, offer to one another and to the larger community the gift of our own transformed suffering. Hope, like a small orange or a brown egg, cupped in our open hands, saying, "Here, take this fruit. It is for you. It comes with my blessing. And there is more, more than we know, more than we will ever understand. Take this and share it, because there is more to dream and more to do, and we need everyone. We need you. Take this and share it. Take heart." Amen.